gay kids are facing so much exclusion and denial, and worse than that, they face harassment, discrimination, and assault on a daily basis.
Senator Helms had been a friend of my husband's. My husband had supported him. I always voted for him. And I felt sure that if I just wrote him a letter of explanation, he would understand. That was very naive on my part.
We got the other mothers together whom we knew, and as I say, he was running for re-election at the time, so we just couldn't let it get by without doing something, and the only thing that we could think about doing was that we could oppose him.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Berlin's got a new mayor, and he's openly gay. A mall in Superior, Wisconsin, gives queer youth an inferiority complex, and the remarkable anti-Helms Mothers of Magic are determined to keep singing. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Donald Herman.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending June 16, 2001. Klaus Wowereit became mayor of Berlin this week after identifying himself as a gay man for the first time. At a meeting of the ruling Social Democratic Party this week, he ended a speech accepting their unanimous mayoral nomination by saying, "I'm gay and that's a good thing." His coming out is believed by some to have anticipated a possible outing, but it's reportedly been well received. His speech was greeted with extended applause, and later a poll found that only about 1 in 7 Germans had concerns about having a gay mayor. He later commented that, "I've never conducted gay politics, but rather politics as a gay man." The 47-year-old Wowereit is an attorney who has served 6 years on the Berlin Assembly with little public notice. Exiting Berlin Mayor Eberhard Diepgen suffered a vote of no confidence by the City Assembly this week, reflecting allegations of corruption and mismanagement resulting in debt totaling billions of dollars. Wowereit was then elected by the Assembly by a vote of 89-78 with 2 abstentions. He's been sworn in to head an interim government until Berliners go to the polls, probably in September. Wowereit is the second open gay to head a major European city following the election of Bertrand Delanoë as mayor of Paris earlier this year. Because Berlin is actually a city-state of nearly 3.5 million people, Wowereit can also be viewed as a governor.
In Britain, Michael Portillo formally announced his candidacy for the leadership of the opposition Conservative Party. He's favored to win over 2 or 3 likely candidates who are farther to the right. Preparing for his political comeback 2 years ago, Portillo publicly referred to homosexual experiences in his youth, although he has admitted to none since his marriage nearly 20 years ago. That admission alone makes him unfit for party leadership, right-wing senior Tory Lord Tebbit told the BBC this week. Tebbit said he prefers Portillo's likely opponent, Ian Duncan Smith, because Smith is a normal family man with children. 18 of the 61 local party chairs reportedly also oppose Portillo specifically because of his gay past. But a public poll taken at the time Portillo's statement ran in the London Times found that nearly 70% of Britons would accept a prime minister with such a history, while nearly 60% would accept an openly gay prime minister. Portillo has urged the Tories to soften their vehement opposition to gay and lesbian civil rights. In announcing his candidacy, Portillo called the Tories' devastating defeat at the polls this month catastrophic and promised his leadership would mean major changes in the party's style and the issues it chooses to focus on. He said, "We need to adopt a tone that is moderate and understanding, warning that otherwise the party will lose the public's respect. Conservatives will vote for their new leader in July, with the winner to be announced by early August."
Italy's new Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi named several vehemently anti-gay neo-fascists to his cabinet this week. Among them were Umberto Bossi, head of the Nationalist Northern League, and Gianfranco Fini, head of the National Alliance formed from what was once Mussolini's brown shirts. Fini will serve as deputy prime minister. Although Feeney was key to the election success of the ruling Casa del Liberta coalition, pundits had believed the strong showing of Berlusconi's own Forza Italia party would allow him to sidestep Bossi, whose party pulled less than 5% of the vote.
The U.S. Senate this week voted narrowly to withhold federal education funds from schools that deny meeting space to the Boy Scouts of America because of its policy of excluding gays. An identical measure was approved by a voice vote in the House in May. The education amendment by homophobic North Carolina Republican Senator Jesse Helms also ensures access for other youth groups that, in its words, prohibit the acceptance of homosexuality. During lengthy debate, Democrats claimed that language could be used to force access for hate groups. But conservative West Virginia Democratic Senator Robert Byrd supported Helms' amendment to give it a 51-49 edge. California Democratic Senator Barbara Boxer later introduced a successful amendment to bar discrimination against groups that support gays and lesbians as well. The overall education funding bill was passed by an overwhelming 91-8.
The Scouts' policy has created controversy across the nation since a divided U.S. Supreme Court upheld their right to discriminate a year ago. The National Group's official declaration of the previously unwritten policy led to reconsideration of Scout Group status by local governments, school districts, United Ways, and corporate donors with non-discrimination policies, including sexual orientation. When the more than 300 regional councils of the Boy Scouts of America held their annual meeting earlier this month, there were calls to end the ban on gays from some of the largest groups, including those from Los Angeles, New York City, Chicago, Philadelphia, Boston, Minneapolis, and San Francisco.
Also this week, perhaps the most notable victim of the Scouts' ban on gays confirmed the preliminary settlement of his lawsuit against them without disclosing terms. Len Lonzi had served well over a decade as head of California's Los Padres Council of the Boy Scouts. Then he identified himself as a gay man while testifying in the Scouts' defense before the Santa Barbara County Board of Supervisors, which ultimately ended a special deal with the council for the use of some county facilities and its annual cash grant. Lonzi was fired as a result, believed to be the highest-ranking scout in the U.S. to come out since the high court ruling. He sued for breach of contract, defamation, discrimination, and wrongful termination.
Also in California, a federal appeals court upheld San Francisco's pioneering equal benefits ordinance in the face of a challenge by the religious right. Since 1997, San Francisco has required its contractors to offer their unmarried employees' domestic partners the same benefits extended to married workers' spouses. The three-judge panel of the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeal unanimously rejected an Ohio-based company's claim that the local law represented an unconstitutional restriction of interstate commerce. Gay and lesbian activists were impressed that a conservative judge wrote a ruling clearly identifying the Equal Benefits Ordinance as a legitimate defense of civil rights. Since San Francisco passed its ordinance, Los Angeles and Seattle have adopted similar ones, and it's believed that a number of other cities may be encouraged to follow suit in the wake of this legal victory. A further challenge to San Francisco's ordinance by the Air Transport Association is still pending in the same appellate court.
Hawaii now has a hate crimes bill for the first time, one which will increase sentences for crimes motivated by homophobia as well as other biases. It was signed into law this week by Lieutenant Governor Mazie Hirono, who had specifically asked Democratic Governor Ben Cayetano to perform that honor while he traveled on the mainland. Among those attending the signing ceremony was gay activist Martin Rice, who is one of a score of gays victimized in a serious hate attack while on a camping trip on Kauai. Two young men have been charged with attempted murder for that attack.
Also in the U.S. this week, two of the nation's largest Christian denominations held their national conferences. The Anti-Gay Southern Baptist Convention, representing nearly 16 million members, met in New Orleans. In keeping with that locale, the gay-supportive interfaith group Soul Force capped a week of silent protest with a demonstration in the form of a jazz funeral. While dancing to When the Saints Go Marching In, about 100 members attempted to carry into the meeting a coffin representing gays and lesbians damaged by the denomination's anti-gay positions. The result was 34 arrests for trespassing, but those charges were later dropped. As it does each year, the conservative-dominated convention featured several explicitly anti-gay proposals and passed one applauding President George W. Bush's refusal to issue a proclamation of Gay and Lesbian Pride Month. Most proposals were sent to committees, but a move to allow ex-gays to speak at the 2002 meeting was defeated.
It was quite a different story at the General Assembly of the 2.5 million member Presbyterian Church USA, where 60% of delegates approved a move to ordain sexually active gays and lesbians. Just 4 years ago, the denomination officially adopted the ban on ordination of non-celibate gays and lesbians as church law, although it had been an authoritative interpretation since 1978. Repeal of the ban, which had been recommended by the denomination's Committee on Ordination Standards, will still have to be endorsed by a majority of the 173 regional presbyteries to take effect. That voting will take months, and no one is yet willing to predict the outcome.
And finally, fans in 100 countries are bidding farewell to TV's Xena Warrior Princess after 6 years. A strong lesbian following helped make the action-adventure series one of the top-rated syndicated dramas. Its star, New Zealander Lucy Lawless, told the Associated Press, "Originally, it was a story about Xena and Gabrielle confronting the world. But the story shifted, and it became about how the relationship between the two of them was affected. There were times we'd play up to the lesbian subtext. The producers and writers weren't afraid to toy with that. But it was never meant to be an overtone. It didn't matter one way or the other to me or to Renee O'Connor. It made no difference in how we played the roles. We just tried to play a relationship of love and respect. And what people wanted to read into it was fine."
That's News Wrap for the week ending June 16th, 2001. Written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Donald Herman.
Stay tuned for the inspiring story of two women who stood up to homophobic U.S. Senator Jesse Helms. You'll meet the marvelous mothers of magic later in the program.
Watch out, here I come.
An annual youth fair planned for September 15th in Superior, Wisconsin, will have to move to the campus of the University of Wisconsin-Superior because the Mariner Mall, where it's been held for the last 2 years, won't allow the participation of a social and support group for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender teens. Mike Simonson originally filed this report for Wisconsin Public Radio.
After several years at the Mariner Mall, this fall's youth fair will be at UW-Superior's Westman Arena. UW Extension youth educator for Reba Pendleton says mall management notified her that the gay teen group Together for Youth is not welcome at the fair. Negotiations went nowhere, so Pendleton said she had no choice but to stick up for the banned group. It's the law.
To ensure that no person or group is being discriminated against, and this also means that I cannot hold events at facilities where discrimination occurs. So I guess my decision to change the location from Mariner Mall to Westman Arena at UWS is very simple.
But difficult nevertheless. She notified Shirley Duke, who is the Gay Lesbian Teenagers Coordinator at Lutheran Social Services in Duluth. Duke says she's glad UW Extension supports her group, but she isn't looking forward to telling her kids that they're not wanted at the youth fair.
Gay kids are facing so much exclusion and denial. And worse than that, they face harassment, discrimination, and assault on a daily basis. So
this happens kind of often?
Gay kids hear anti-gay talk in the schools 25 to 40 times a day.
Duke says her teen members have been assaulted, harassed, and have had their belongings vandalized. That's one reason she wants to have a booth at the youth fair, along with other community groups and services, so gay teens know that they have a place to turn. But Mariner Mall General Manager John Severson says he got complaints about the group's presence last year. He's sticking by his decision.
I was surprised and taken back that for a youth fair, that would be a group that would be exhibiting here at the Mariner Mall. So I made it clear that, in my opinion, was an inappropriate time for that group to be at the shopping center exhibiting.
Severson says homosexuality is an adult issue and has no place at a youth fair. What about a gay or lesbian youth who's at the fair? Wouldn't that be...
Well, you know, I think we should stop the interview. I've made my position very clear. And if there is a human, a person who happens to be a gay or a lesbian, who wants to come to our health fairs, we make these different types of events available throughout the year.
Other groups that have had exhibits in the past at the youth fair include local health agencies and the domestic abuse shelter. Shirley Duke says Severson's decision is unfortunate, and she says it's not fair to her teen members.
We learn to say, well, I guess it could be worse. But the thing is, we're not asking for pity. We don't want pity. What we want is equal opportunity.
They will get that opportunity now that the youth fair is moving on campus in Superior. Extension educator Pendleton says this is a chance for the community to set an example of tolerance.
I hope so. The society and our communities more than ever are becoming more diverse. And I hope it makes a community much richer when we can embrace our differences and we can celebrate those differences together.
The youth groups are diverse, from the 4-H to the Boy Scouts to the Gay Lesbian Teen Club. More than 2,000 young people and their parents attend the youth fair every year. The difference this year is that they won't be able to duck out to enjoy mall features like the Mall Video Arcade. In Superior, Mike Simonson, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Sing it, your friend to be gay. Sing it, your happy that way. Sing it, your friend to be gay. Sing it, your happy this way.
Hi, this is Tom Robinson reminding you that you're either listening to, discovering for the first time, or tuned right in to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine.
The showpiece of the homosexual movement in the United States, demanding that society accept as normal a lifestyle that most of the world's religions consider immoral and which the average American voter instinctively finds repulsive.
What would you do if your son died from AIDS and then you read in the local paper that your own U.S. senator said people with AIDS deserved their fate? Two North Carolina women faced with this question rose to the occasion with a ferocity and determination that surprised even them. This Way Out's Steve Pride talks with Patsy Clark and Eloise Vaughn, the remarkable matrons of magic.
Jesse Helms has made a radical out of me. He makes me want to take off my clothes, shout from the highest tree. Make a march on Wall Street in my DVDs. Jesse Helms has made a radical out of me.
Heroes come in all shapes and sizes. Two of mine are grandmothers, one a lifelong Democrat and the other a recovering Republican. These days they often complete each other's sentences, but in 1995 they only had one thing in common. Both of them lived in North Carolina, and both had lost a son named Mark.
Hello, I'm Eloise Vaughn.
And I'm Patsy Clark. The first time I knew what homosexuality was when I went to college.
Me too.
I was 18 years old. No, it wasn't mentioned in my home. Nobody said anything about it. It wasn't necessary. It just didn't come up.
My son was 34 when he died. He was the oldest of my four children. He was a handsome, beautiful person. He loved to sing. He had a beautiful baritone voice. He finished state in communications, and that's why he went into the television work and loved it. Appeared in productions when he could in Raleigh and Atlanta, wherever he was. Sang at his brother's wedding. He was the kind of person who would give you the shirt off his back. He never saw anybody that he didn't like. I used to think he worked too hard to make people love him because we loved him just as he was, but he seemed to work very hard at that, and I never did know why. I do now, because he thought he knew something about himself that other people might not love him so much if they knew, and he lived like that.
Mm-hmm. My Mark was, we all think they're wonderful. Of course, this is Mother. But he was very handsome. He was 6 feet, 7 inches tall. And no, he didn't play basketball. He was not a lot of fun. He was a little irresponsible. a little lazy. He was a real human being, but there was no one you would rather be around than Mark Clark, in my view. I say he was irresponsible, and yet when it came time to face the most difficult time of his life, he faced it with total responsibility, great class, even elegance, if you can think of dying with elegance. But he did. He died with humor and class.
I've never heard once in this chamber anybody say to the homosexuals, stop what you're doing. Do you realize that if they would stop what they're doing, there would not be one additional case of AIDS in the United States of America?
Senator Helms had been a friend of my husband's. My husband had supported him. I always voted for him. And I felt sure that if I just wrote him a letter of explanation, he would understand. That was very naive on my part. I did write him a letter, and I spent a lot of time thinking about it and trying to make it right. And I asked him only to be more compassionate and not judge anyone as deserving what they got if they died of AIDS, because no one deserves that. And about 2 weeks after I'd sent that letter to him, his reply came. He started off with saying, I do not judge homosexuality. The Bible does. That's a little hard for me to take. He went on about some things that were completely extraneous to what I'd written him about, and in the last paragraph of his letter, he said, I'm sorry that Mark chose to play Russian roulette with his sexuality, but that does not change the reality of what is. That was very hard to read. So I did what a lot of mothers and grandmothers might do. I cried, and I walked the floor, and I cried for about 2 weeks, feeling totally inept because I had not reached this man's heart, and I blamed myself. But after 2 weeks, I thought, now, wait a minute. This is not my fault. He should have understood. And then I got angry, and then Eloise and I began on this political rampage.
We got the other mothers together whom we knew. We had a meeting out at Patsy's house in her living room, and we looked at the clippings and we talked about them, and we said, what can we do about this? And as I say, he was running for re-election at the time, so we just couldn't let it get by without doing something. And the only thing that we could think about doing was that we could oppose him. And we decided that that's what we would do. At that point, we didn't know we were actually starting a political PAC, but that's what it turned out to be. Because when we started working and traveling, money began to come to us. And an attorney friend told us that when you have money, you have to be registered with the FEC and with the State Board of Elections. So we took the steps to do that. And then we were an official PAC. And we chose the name Magic. Patsy's daughter actually suggested that Magic, Mothers Against Jesse in Congress, so it has the J in the middle instead of the G. And that caught on really well, and it was easy for people to remember. And whenever we went somewhere, we were the Magic Mothers, and we had bumper stickers and T-shirts and stick all kinds of buttons, all kinds of things, and we were Magic. And as I say, the more we did, the more money came in. Eventually, we raised a lot of money.
Yeah, we started with a pickle jar. With $5 or $20 check, and we thought, mercy, people are actually going to give us money. It was amazing. It really was, but we ended up with, what, $65,000, which is nothing when you think of what Senator Helms earns or makes or raises, whatever you want to call it. But to us, it was a lot of money. We really basically had 10 or 12 mothers and grandmothers, all from the late 60s up into the 80s, doing this work. And then it spread across the country, and people sent money from almost every state in the union. We were amazed at the response.
Our help came from unexpected corners, and as Patsy mentioned, it came from everywhere, from people that we didn't know and never heard of, but who felt in their hearts that what the senator had been saying for years. You see, he started out when he first gained power in the 1970s. He was a radio commentator and had a news program every night at 6 o'clock on the Raleigh station, and he always ended up with a tirade against civil rights. He would talk about Dr. Martin Luther King and say, Dr. Martin Luther King. And it was just amazing that he said those things, but it got power to him. And then, of course, he's intellectual. He came out against the university, and he made his statement many times that we thought what everybody ought to do is just put a fence around Chapel Hill and around those red pinkos and commies over in Chapel Hill and fence them in. And so, you know, that became passé at the end of the Cold War. And so he looked around and thought, well, who else is there? And he found the gay community. And as Patsy says, that's the last, and I'm putting quote unquote in the air as I say this, acceptable prejudice. And he's using that now. It's a pattern with him.
I keep hoping for some kind of wonderful thing to happen, like Paul on the road to Damascus, and that something will really strike him. And what a wonderful voice he could be if he could have a conversion. I'm sure if he's hearing this, he's certainly not going to agree with that. But I think it would be wonderful for someone who has said the things that he has said about the gay community, if he could reverse himself and say, you know, I see this differently now.
I think as far as what the future holds, I really do think that a critical mass is building, that people are becoming more open, that they're becoming more educated, that we don't have the willful ignorance that we've seen in the past. There are so many things going on in our world now. There are books and there are articles, there are plays, there are people who are role models in other ways who are pointing a different way. And I just think that things are changing. It's incremental, but I do believe that they're changing for the better. And I hope I live to see it.
We want to be a part of that. We hope we are.
We hope that we're a little part that's adding to that.
Senator Jesse Helms comes up for re-election next year, and every indication is that he will run again. Eloise Vaughn is 72, and Patsy Clark is turning 69 this summer. They have no illusions about mounting another campaign against Helms in 2002, but hope that they've changed enough hearts in their home state that other mothers, sisters, fathers, aunts, and uncles will carry their flag into battle. Patsy and Eloise recount their story in a new book published by Allison Books called Keep Singing. I'm very sure they shall. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Donald Herman, Graham Underhill, Chris Ambidge, Jason Lynn, Brian Nunes, Rex Walkner, Mike Simonson, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Dead or Alive, Laura Wetzler, Danny B. Harvey, the Jameson Boys, and Don Wigton performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can also hear This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. Just point your browser to www.planetout.com and click first on Multimedia, then on Radio. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded through designated contributions by Uncommon Cloud Visa card holders who've chosen This Way Out and through direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. For an urgent message about This Way Out's critical financial situation, please visit our webpage at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on C101 Hamilton, Ontario, KNON Dallas, Texas, WYEP Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and more than 125 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody, stay tuned.